Speaks to us and through us and reminds us of the good that we are, the good that we have always been, and the good that we will always be. The highest voice is speaking to and through me now. The highest voice is speaking to and through me now. Could we know that together? The highest voice is speaking to and through me now. Speaks to me of the love that is. The knowledge that is. The peace that is. The presence that is. The power that is. And the divine voice reminds me that all these aspects of God are in me now. And all these aspects of God are in my neighbor now. All these aspects of God are in the people I like, and they are in the people I don't like. They're in the people I embrace, and they're in the people I fear. All these aspects of God I welcome in and through my mind. I welcome in and through every cell, every tissue, every fiber of my being, from head to toe and toe to head. All these aspects of God, power, presence, knowledge, love, peace, joy. I welcome them into my vision. I welcome them into my hearing. And I welcome them into my word. The divine voice speaks to me of the good that I am, the good that I have always been, the good that I will always be. The divine voice speaks to and through me of the good that I am. Let's take that thought into the silence. The divine voice, the highest voice, speaks to and through me of the good that I am. Let's take that all the way into the silence. The divine voice speaks and I hear. The divine voice speaks of the good that I am, the good that my neighbor is, and I hear because I'm listening. So knowing this, let's start our journey back here. back here to this sanctuary, this place called Unity. As we come back, let us come back refreshed, renewed, fully aware of the good that has just taken place, that we may say thank you and amen. She will be back with another song, not from Desperate Measures, but one I just love how she sings. And she, oddly enough, she plays it not, but she still wears those shoes in the show. And it's set in the 1800s, Old West, but it was beautiful. Thank you so much. So today's talk is called Separation Anxiety. And to me, that's what happens when I forget that I am one with God, when I am one with the Source. When I forget, I get very anxious. And I forget how to behave. And I forget how to think. And I forget that you and I are made in love. And I start to think other things. Anybody? Yeah. We're crazy people. When we forget, we become crazy people. And we start to think that God is something. No, so God is not. And I start to think I am something. I am not. And then, of course, I forget that you are you. And I start to think you're something you are not. And I apologize. I'll try to remember better next time. I don't know this moment, but that's it. I'm sure I'll forget. So often it's so easy to forget because I think the world is real. I think my body controls me, is my master. I think money is my master. I think your opinion counts for something. I think the weather is my master. I think so much is boss of me. You're not the boss of me. And the weather is not the boss of me. And the floor, well, the floor might be the boss of me. It falls out from under me. It could shake me up a bit. But there's a lot of things. Traffic can shake me up a bit. If I forget. When I forget. Because often I forget. Did I mention that? Okay, I forgot. Ding, ding, ding. And so to begin to look at my life and realize, oh, I have been anxious for all this time. For 27 years, I've been anxious. The other day, I looked at the handle of our refrigerator, and it had schmutz on it. Because David, if he cooks something, he's not thinking about cleaning hands, he just opens the refrigerator door. And then he closes it and he walks away. If he eats a piece of toast walking across the kitchen, it doesn't occur to him to put something on it or even to notice. But my feelings were so hurt the other night, not by him, when I saw that schmutz on the refrigerator door handle, I wanted to cry. And let me tell you why. Because for so many years, I have robbed myself of thinking I was loved because he left schmutz on the refrigerator. Yeah, I know, it's sad, isn't it? It's like for all these years, we bought our house in 2005. And for every mess, I declared he does not love me. I am not loved because if I were, there wouldn't be this mess here. And I thought, oh my goodness. Now, I wanted to cry because I've robbed myself of so much love. Not just of David, but in my faith. That, you know, I get up here and I declare God is love. I drive down the highway and God is love. And then there's crumbs and I'm not loved. There is schmutz of unknown factors on the handle of the refrigerator. Probably, I don't know, whatever he made. And I declare I'm not loved. And I thought, oh my goodness, all this time, I've been telling myself I'm not loved. How foolish. I can forgive it. And I immediately told David, I said, David, look at this. And he started to apologize, and I said, no, that's not it. I said, this represents how much I have told myself that I am not loved. It does not represent you ever telling me I'm not loved. It represents me. And what it did was it made me declare that we are separate. David and I are separate, and therefore God and I are separate. A few years ago, I thought if I had the money, I'd buy the house across the street. Because I so judged. If there's a mess here, I am not loved, and I have to go somewhere where I am loved. And the only place I could think of was go somewhere by myself. And even then, it's iffy. And so everywhere I go in the world, I'm declaring whether or not I am loved based on my separation anxiety, based on my thinking, well, there's God and. There's me and. There's the highway and. There's the drivers and. I did a wedding yesterday, and there was a lot of them and. The kitchen and me. Send my food back twice. And then I left without eating because I was happier not eating and going home and getting back early last night than waiting for yet a third meal to come out with perhaps some heat in the food. And I didn't want to be mad at the host. I didn't want to be mad at the kitchen. I didn't want to declare we are separate. I would rather have gone home and saved the calories, quite frankly. And I did, and I woke up weighing less this morning. I'm still flying, my goodness. And so to look at all my declarations of separation, all my declarations that presence is not present. And it's not for guilt that I bring this up. It's for realization. We come here on Sundays, hopefully we take classes, hopefully we read the books, and hopefully we pray and we meditate to find our oneness in consciousness. Hopefully we go within to find our oneness. Charles Fillmore, Unity's co-founder, defines prayer as conscious communion with God. And what that means, and it doesn't mean I'm having a big visit with God. What it means is I'm coming into conscious awareness of my source. I've said this several times here. I think it bears repeating. Quit asking God for stuff. If the God of your understanding that is infinite in all knowledge doesn't know what you need or want, you need a new God. What kind of a stupid God do you have that doesn't know what you want, and yet you think it can give it to you? I have to tell it what to give me, but it's too dumb to know what it is I want. And I must describe it in detail. And Edwin will come and say, you must get specific with what you want, but that's not for God's benefit. That's for your benefit. That's for my benefit. When I get specific in my prayer time, it's never to give God better information. It's to get clear, what is it I want, and what do I think what I want will give me? Because a lot of times, a lot of the stuff we want is just so we can tune out. It's so we can numb out. Give me another outfit, give me another car, give me another this, give me another that. It's so I can actually just go to sleep with a new toy, with something fun. And heaven help us if it gets delivered and it's the wrong color, it's the wrong size. It's not this, because I was looking forward to a pick-me-up. And I didn't want to pray my way into a pick-me-up. I wanted to buy something. I wanted to acquire an object in this world to make me, if not connected, at least numb. And so, to start working on the internal life so that there can't be any real disappointments, so that there can't be anything that would ever convince me that God is absent, that Spirit is absent. So you imagine that you would never again try to convince yourself that you are not loved. That you could look in the mirror And whatever you saw looking back at you, well, this is what God looks like, so it must be beautiful. That you look in the mirror and then want to say, hi, God. Even before you brush your teeth. Hi, God. You have to smile. You just have to. How do you, hi, God. You know, who's going to do that? Hi, God. Now, I know some people who cannot look in the mirror and say, hi, God, because they think it's sacrilegious. They think it's that there's something wrong with that. It's arrogant. But no, it's like, how many teachings tell us, ye are gods. You will do all that I do and greater than this. It is the Father within that does the works. We get information all over the place that we are powerful beings. Emmett Fox is one of my favorites in Sermon on the Mount, told me clearly, it is my thoughts that cause all the conditions of my life in the way that I experience them. Are we clear on the difference? I may not cause the conditions, but I cause the way I experience them. Big difference. So are you saying I caused this car accident? No, I'm saying the way that you experience it is the way that you told yourself to experience it. And it's everything. The way you experience your body is the way you tell yourself to experience your body. The way you experience your parents or your children is the way you tell yourself to experience it. And we make it up as we go along. I hope you would agree, and if you don't yet, get deeper understanding, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. But we really do make it up. We look at this and say, this means this, and this means this, and this means this, and that's good, and that's bad, and that's awful, and that's terrible, and that's wonderful, and I like that, and I don't like that. And then we spout it to anyone who will listen, and trying to influence them, and heaven forbid they should disagree. Oh my goodness. Don't you dare disagree, because now I'll have to convince you that the way that I'm wrong is right. Or the way that I'm not wrong is right for you. Because the way that it's right for me, it's taken me years to understand this one. The way that I go within to find the God of my understanding is not the same way everybody goes within, or even ought to go in. You know, ought to go on that path. And so to begin to look at it and say, how would I get in there if I'm not already in? What's the path to my willingness to go within and look differently? Sarah just saying, look in your heart. What's in your heart? Sarah sings that near the top of the show. And it's David Friedman and Peter Kellogg wrote that song. And the point is, look in your heart to find the good, the compassion, the love, the peace. Look in your heart to find the good that you are that could be so generous with yourself. You could be so generous with love. You could be so generous with peace. You could be so generous with joy. You could be so generous if it only these glitches didn't come up. I want to read a couple of things here. First, I'm going to read Charles Fillmore's definition of separation. He says, separate from the revealing word. Separation from God means man, being the offspring of God, has the power to create. Do we hear that? We all have the power to create. Man has used his privilege and created a realm of error thought, which separates him in consciousness from God. It doesn't say it actually separates us from God. Our error thought separates us in consciousness. So that what that tells me is I'm never separate from God. And if God's not the word you want to use for that, because I'm never separate from my source. I'm never separate from love. I'm never separate from whatever we know God to be. And then I looked up separation in my favorite book, The Holy Spirit's Interpretation of the New Testament. And first passage I read is from the book of Galatians, chapter 4, starts with verse 8, and it says, the world is something you look upon and believe it is real. Now, if you go into the subway and the car is just pulling right away, it feels pretty real, doesn't it? Hot. I sometimes say hell is 3 degrees cooler than the subway platform. Not that I believe in hell. It's a euphemism. When you make this mistake, you pay homage to a false god. Your false god takes many forms, but always its purpose is the same. It is the purpose you have given it. The purpose of the world as it is seen and believed is to tell you that you are separate. When you believe the world, this is the message you receive. Do not judge yourself for believing the world. When you judge yourself, you agree you are separate. For in order to be judged, you must be separate from something that you can be judged against. My purpose for this discussion is not to judge you or tempt you to judge yourself, but to help you see what you do with the power of your mind. Further down it says, the world is effective as a teacher of separateness because it allows you to join, and still it tells you that you are separate. In this way, it is an effective false god. But can a false god create itself? Can a false god develop and deliver its own messages? Who makes the false god a god? It is the one who worships it that made it. For the one who worships it had a desire, and through the image of the false god, that desire seems to be manifest. But is the message of the false god true if it was made apart from God and attributed to an image that isn't real? What keeps the false message alive within the experience? It is the mind of its maker that holds up the false image through its worship of the false image and its practice of its message. Without the involvement of its maker, the false god is without power. And so you look at the mirror in the morning. There's nobody else in the room with you. Who's telling you what you look like? You are. You're either saying beautiful or ugly or eh. You're making it up. What if you looked in the mirror and said, God, tell me what I look like, that I may see myself as God being me, that I may see myself as my source sees. Could my source see me as less than lovely? Could my neighbor's source see my neighbor as less than lovely? And therefore, could my source see my neighbor as less than lovely? And so we would be wise to quit declaring something other than lovely. If you can bear to turn on the news, Facebook, any of it, if you can bear to do that and call everything lovely, even though you don't know how it's lovely, what if lovely were a reality rather than an opinion? What if good were a reality rather than an opinion based on what I don't like and don't like? What if bad didn't exist at all? What if it's all coming down to what I say it is for my experience of it? What if? To one who makes a false god, that god becomes real through worship. No longer does the god seem lifeless, but the god seems real and powerful through the worship that is given it. Then the maker, who was the cause of the god, seems to become subject to the god, which now seems to be the maker. This is as it seems, and this is how it is believed and practiced. But what seems is not truth, and what is truth is not changed by that which seems. So, if you would like to eradicate all anxiety, come to terms that you are one with spirit. You are one with the voice. You are one, and so is your neighbor, one with love, one with knowledge, one with power, one with presence. That you are free to love. No matter what's going on in the world, there's not one thing going on in this world that tells you you're not allowed to love. We're clear on this. Nothing in the world, nothing even in our past, today can tell us, I ought not love. Nothing. And so, we may start to skip down the street, even if it annoys others. Even if it frightens some beings. Oh my God, that adult is skipping down the street. They must go to that crazy church. It's in this case. Even. Now, I'm not saying bang into people on the street. But what if you were to invite somebody to your church? It's not unlike skipping. Because some of us are too embarrassed to skip down the street, and some of us are too embarrassed to invite people to our church because they might think that it's weird. Last night at the wedding, one of my congregants, because we do Facebook Live in Norwalk too, just as we're doing it here. Hey, TV Land. And he was saying, a friend of his said, you shouldn't put that, share that on your Facebook page. People might think it's strange. And I thought, and he said, well, they might, but it's my church, and I'm happy. I like going there. And my thought is, you know what? Joel Osteen's people aren't ashamed of their church. The Baptists aren't ashamed of their church. Most other communities, fellowships, are not ashamed of their spiritual church, their spiritual community. If you would like to become unashamed of yours, anybody who is, I'm not saying everybody here is, this is not a blanket statement, but if you think, boy, I'd like to invite somebody, but I don't know how, I have a really, really great way. You say, would you like to come to Unity with me on Sunday? That's how I came to Unity, by the way. A friend of mine said, would you like to come to Unity with me this Sunday? And I did. Come ever since. That was 1998. And a friend, I saw, would you like, well, what is Unity? And here's where you get tripped up, right? Well, it's a nice place, but it's, I don't know, they don't worship Jesus, don't worry, they don't. It's a spiritual philosophy for positive living. Isn't that a short and sweet way to describe your spiritual home? What is Unity? Well, the message is a spiritual philosophy for positive living. And it's got a beautiful community. And of course, it has phenomenal music. But the message from start to finish is how to love, how to live in peace, how to live in joy, how to admit it's okay to love. It's okay to be peaceful. And it's okay to drop the rock, because I'm not under attack. And that's why I keep coming back to Unity, is to remember I'm not separate from my good. I'm not separate, and therefore I do not need to be anxious. I no longer need to make up a story. David, last week, he said something, he was frightened about something. He's away at this heavy duty retreat this week that is supposed to be quite life-changing. I mean, they take away your phone for a week. And so he was getting anxious, and he was declaring a couple of upsetting things, but they were all story. And finally I said, quit trying to scare me. And he apologized, and he realized he can tell me where he's afraid. He can't tell me false reasons for being afraid. Don't tell me that the newspaper is your reason to be afraid. Oh, because this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, we don't know that. It hasn't happened yet. So what if just tonight you tell me, I have anxiety, I have fear, I have this, because it's going through my head. I can be there and I can support you. But when we start to what I call lie, which is a very heavy-duty term, I think we're liars a lot when we say, this is the worst thing that ever happened. Really? Not yet. It isn't, trust me. And so to begin to say, wait a minute, I'm separating myself from God. And I'm separating myself from you. And I want to love God. And I want to love me. And I want to love you. Let that be your foundation. I want to love God. I want to love me. And I want to love you. And I might not be able to count on you to help me do that. So I've got to go within and pray. God, how do I love you? Sean, how do I love you? Now, God, tell me how to love my neighbor, whether I'm in their presence or not. Because let me tell you something. If my neighbor knew he or she were loved, my neighbor would never hurt anybody again. Happy, joyful, loved people do not hurt other people. It's the people who have forgotten that hurt other people. So I've invited Sarah to come back and sing a song of love. Come on.